Today's Teisho will be on Case 2 in the Book of Serenity, Bodhidharma's Emptiness. Introduction. A man presented a jewel 3 times, but didn't escape punishment. When a luminous jewel is thrown to anyone, few do not draw their sword. For an impromptu guest, there is no impromptu host. What's appropriate provisionally is not appropriate for the real. If unusual treasures and rare jewels cannot be put to use, I'll bring out the head of a dead cat. Look. Case. Emperor Wu of Liang asked a great teacher Bodhidharma, "What is the highest meaning of the holy truths?" Bodhidharma said, "There's no holy, emptiness." The emperor said, "Who are you facing me?" Bodhidharma said, "Don't know." The emperor didn't understand. Bodhidharma subsequently crossed the Yangtze River and came to Shaolin and faced a wall for 9 years. Verse, empty, nothing holy. The approach is far off. Succeeding, he swings the axe without injuring his nose. Failing, he drops the pitcher without looking back. Still and silent, coolly, he sat at Shaolin. In silence, he completely brought up the true imperative. The clear moon of autumn turns its frosty disk. The Milky Way thin, the dipper hangs down its handle in the night. In succession, the robe and bowl have been imparted to descendants. From this, humans and divinities have made both medicine and disease. I want to thank everybody for coming here this morning to practice. I know that for some of you this is really a challenge. Last night somebody came to sit and came to the sesshin, and he said that he was feeling ill, and asked if he could if he should come right into the zendo or if he could get a little sleep. And I have to say, I was really deeply moved by that question. Here is somebody who is actually sick, and he still has this desire to come to sesshin. And I was really very moved, because most people, if they were ill, wouldn't come to sesshin, or a lot of people wouldn't come to sesshin. They just say, "Well, some other time." But here's somebody who really was, he even looked a little sick, and basically was really needed to sack out. But he didn't leave, he sacked out and showed up this morning at 4:30 to sit. So that's really admirable. And some other people here are here for the first time, either your first sesshin period or your first 5-day sesshin. And I just want to say how deeply I appreciate your situation. And please have courage and don't be intimidated by this. What we're going to do is quite demanding. But the rewards are really enormous. I promise you that. I've talked about this story before, but my first sesshin was really I was quite unprepared, and maybe that was a good thing in a way. I guess if I had known more what I was getting into, I'm not sure I would have come. But I had just started sitting at the Seattle Zen Center, which, like our Zen Center, met at the university, at local university. And people would come to sit on a Wednesday night, just like now. And it was operated by a professor of art history named Glenn Webb, who had trained in Japan for a number of years as a monk and had received Dharma transmission and had come back to the United States and got a tenure track job at the University of Washington. And Glenn had started a little sitting group at the university, and he was in the art history department, but he had control over some space in the building, and one of the large studio rooms was where we sat. And I can still remember that room. It was a big studio room, and they would clear away all the equipment. I would come in and sit in this room, and I remember there was a big fan that would pull the clear the air. This was a place where people did painting and sculpture, and so there was this big fan in the ceiling that would just and about halfway through every Wednesday night sit, there must have been a timer because the fan would stop. You'd hear this and then it would stop, and there would be like a boom. And this would go on for like 45 minutes, and then halfway through the evening it'd be boom. You know, it was almost like somebody hitting a gong. You know, it's just like very, very beautiful. I started sitting there, and somebody was kind enough to show me how to sit. I had read some books on Zen practice and had been doing some sitting on my own also, but somebody showed me how actually to sit, and when I would try to sit in the half lotus position, it was really difficult for me. I can remember pulling my leg up over my foot up over my thigh, and at the end of 25 minutes, literally being like sweaty, you know, from struggling. So I would come to the university and sit and pull my leg up, and about 20 minutes in, I would be thinking, okay, you know, ring the bell, ring the bell. Anyway, I had just started doing that, and there was a woman who was more or less helping Glenn to run the Zen group, and her name was Wendy McCow, and she's now the abbot of the Los Angeles Zen Center. But Wendy, at that time was, I think she worked at the university too, as I recall. But anyway, she was organizing people to come to something called a sesshin. And it was some kind of a retreat. So she was very attractive, I have to say. And she came up to me after a sit, and she said, "Would you like to go to sesshin?" And she smiled, and her face was really radiant. I still remember what a beautiful face she had. And I said, "Yes, of course. You know. What sesshin?" So anyway, I got to sesshin, and it was astonishing, you know. This morning, there was a young gentleman who left, young man, I should say, who left. He came last night, and he did the sit last night, and then he got up at 4:30 this morning and recited sutras, and then he came in to see me with a great look of urgency in his face while I was making breakfast. And I'm cutting the papaya up, and you know, the papaya is the king of fruit, you know, or the queen of fruit, as you wish. You know, it's very important, and I want to do it right, and I'm concentrating, and I look up, and there's this face in the glass, and it's the new guy. And I look back down to the papaya, and I'm cutting, and then I look up again, and it's like he's looking very urgent. So anyway, I saw that he wanted to talk to me, so I came out. I wiped my hands off and I came out, and I said, "What's up?" And he said, listen, I've got to talk. And I said, I can't talk right now. I've got to make breakfast. And he said, well, he said, listen, I think I'm way over my head. I'm way over my head here. He had written me, I should say, asking to come to Sesshin. I had never sat with him. And I had written back by email and said, are you sure you want to do this? Look at the schedule. You know, we sit many, many hours a day. Oh, no, I can do it. I'm confident I can do it. So anyway, he was standing looking in the glass, and I came out, and he said, listen, I don't think I can do this. And I said, my heart went out to him because I understood, I still didn't want him to leave. So I said, look, why don't you stay for one day? Just one day, just give it a day, have a good day. His face was like terrifying, right? So then I said, okay, I understand. I said, but look, why don't you stay and just do one more sit and have breakfast? And his face was still terrified, right? No kidding. And I'm not laughing at him. I could easily have been in the same situation. It was like, he said, listen, I've got to go. It was like, and this has happened before, actually. People, they just realize, I've got to get out of here, And that was how he was. So there was nothing I could say even to get him to stay for breakfast, Well, our first sesshin took place on Vashon Island. And I got a ride to the sesshin. And I did think about leaving. I did think about quitting. And probably about the same length of time into the sesshin. And I don't think I stayed because I have more fortitude than this guy, really. I really didn't know how to get home, Really. I really didn't know. I didn't know how to get home. I didn't know where I was, I didn't have a car. And so I thought, all right, I'll try to stick it out. I'm kind of trapped here, It was challenging. It was challenging. That was 35 years ago. The first sesshin, I have to say, was difficult. My legs hurt a great deal, and I think I was in pain a lot of the time. If you find yourself overwhelmed, there are chairs around the zendo, and you're welcome to sit in them, please. I think it was unfortunate that a young man left, because I tried to say, if you just had a breather, if you just sat in the chair for a couple sits, you might be ready to get back down on the cushion. But again, that face said it all. He really didn't want to stay. But I did try to tell him, please, don't give up. Don't beat yourself up about this. This is like trying to run a marathon when you've only been running for half an hour every other day. You're just not prepared. If you're feeling pain and you're struggling, please realize you're not the only one. Everybody in this room has been through all the emotions you're feeling and has had the same, pain in your legs and sort of shock, if you think about it, there's something about Sesshin which is really strange, We sat last night for three sits in a row. And then we got up at 4:30 and we recited sutras for 45 minutes. And then we had tea and a bathroom break. And then we did three more sits. And that guy's face was literally like terrified, like he had seen a ghost. So, it's so complicated, isn't it? Because, if I it wasn't just the pain, right? I mean, how much pain could he have had in six sits, It wasn't just the pain, it's something deeper. There's something deeper about all this. Everybody's legs hurt after a while. You know, it's not, I think, the physical pain. There's something deeper about sesshin. Something, you know, it's hard to get your mind around. But that look of terror I've encountered before, you know. Some of you may have noticed this morning that Gary and Yen, you know, sat through three sits without moving. And I believe Intiaz did too. And you'll see this is consistent. And I'm going to talk about Gary right now. You'll see every morning he consistently sits like that. You know, so even if it's day five or six when other people are tired, you know, first sit, ding, he doesn't move. Second sit, ding, he doesn't move. Third sit, ding, he doesn't move. And, you know, people might think, my God, you know, that guy is incredible. You know, he never moves. And, but let me tell you a story about Gary, okay? Long ago, you know, Gary came to the Zendo at the university, and basically I think his ability to sit was limited to about 15 minutes. That's really true. And basically, he came, his first sesshin, after maybe a year or two of sitting with the group, he you know, Gary started sitting and he could only do about 15 minutes, and then he started practicing on his own. And he has a job, he has to get up early to sit, and he sat early in the morning before his job, so that takes a lot of discipline, right, to get up early and to sit down on the cushion. You know, when you really, really would like to be sleeping, and to do your zazen maybe for half an hour and eventually an hour, you know, every day, and then come to the university at night, that's real self-discipline. And after a while of doing that, he came to a sesshin, and Gary, you know, he came to his first sesshin. We used to have sesshin at my house. Jaru and Yen, Gary, and Tiaz, we used to have it at my house, because we only used to have about 10 people. So anyway, Gary came to the first sesshin, and he got through the first day okay, came into Dokusan, and how's it going? Oh, it's okay. Second day, you know, how's it going? Well, it's okay, I guess, you know. Third day, gone, right? And by the way, I can remember I was in the kitchen cooking, and Gary came in, and his face was like white as a sheet, right? I said, "What's wrong?" He said, "I've got to go." And I said, "Look, you know, could you, why don't you stay? Could you stay, finish the day?" And, no, I've got to go, you know? You see, I haven't, really, you know? Okay, see you later. See you next week, you know, because he had to sit. Now, a lot of people leave and they never come back, you know. But Gary came back to the sit, you know. And so, you know, maybe after like 6 months, Gary came and said, "Listen, I think I'm going to do another sesshin." And okay, good work, good guy, you know. So he comes to sesshin, and you know, it was like day one, comes into Dokusan, "How's it going?" "Oh, I think it's better this time." You know. Day two, "How's it going?" "Okay, I think." Okay. Three. Gone. You know? Really, this went on for a while. Really, this really happened. After a while, it would be like, you know, I'd be in a sesshin and I look up and Gary's got his hat on and his face is white as a sheet, and it's like, oh, must be day three. You know. So there's something about sesshin, you know, and it wasn't the pain, you know, it's not the physical pain, there's something about it that's a little spooky, you know, it's hard to put your finger on it, you know, there's something about sesshin. You know, what is it? You know, what is it that you know, drives people to run for their lives? You know, actually, there was another person here who, she came to sesshin, and she was, she was, you know, pissed off the whole time. You know, she came into Belkasan and she was mad. This was no good, and this was no good, and, you know, the food, blah, 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 blah. You know, I never get to eat. Well, how can we eat so fast? You know, blah, blah, blah. Okay, that was day one, right? You know, day two, something else. Blah, 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 blah. You know, day three. Day two, she said, we had a session here in August, and she said, can we use the pool? And I said, no. Pool is not part of session. Traditionally, they don't use the pools at Zen temples. Really, this really happened. And she was furious, you know. And then I said, look, if you're so unhappy here, you don't have to stay. And I thought I was challenging her, right? I thought she would go, oh, I'm not leaving. So I said that. I said that at nine, it was about 9 o'clock. She was the last Dokusan in the first round. So she came in and she let me know how bad I was for not letting her go into the pool. And then she expressed her general dissatisfaction with things, and I said, well, look, you know, nobody's holding you here, you know, you don't have to stay if you're unhappy. And I came back into the room here to serve tea, and I could hear the car, you know, I could hear the gravel and the pieces of gravel flying in the air and her tires. So there's something about Sesshin, it's very mysterious. Anyway, Emperor Wu of Liang asked great teacher Bodhidharma, what is the highest meaning of the holy truths? You know, what's holy? You know, what's the holiest thing, the most sacred thing? You know, what is it about Zen that, what is it that Zen holds most sacred, most holy? You know, and Bodhidharma says, you know, there isn't any such thing as holiness. You know, we practice emptiness. Not wholly empty. Not wholly empty. We don't pursue the holy. We practice emptiness. See, I think that's why people get in their car with the white face and flee. You know, there's something deeper here that it could be a little frightening. You know, maybe people. You know, when I came to my first sesshin, I honestly had read these books that were just so full of beans, you know. I had read a lot of stuff on Tibetan Buddhism, and I'm not saying that Tibetan Buddhism is full of beans, but I'd read all these books about like secret initiations and things like that, and I remember I read these books that were just totally lies by a man named Lobsang Rampa. And I've talked about this before, but Lobsang Rampa was this English guy who made up incredible stories about Tibet. At one time, nobody had ever been to Tibet, like a handful of people. And so you could pretty much lie to your heart's content about Tibet, and people would maybe believe you, you know. So he created a whole career for himself and sold hundreds of thousands of these books on Tibet that were totally concocted, you know. And he basically says that monks could communicate telepathically, and that people, Tibetans use giant kites to fly around their country, and it's full of mystery and mysterious initiations. And then I actually read a book by a woman who's actually deeply awake. Her name was Alexandra David Neal. She's a remarkable person. She's a French woman who sneaked into Tibet disguised as a man. Really, if you ever want to read an incredible story, she was a French feminist who got tired of being a housewife in France. She didn't want to be, and so she left France, and she read about Tibet and decided she was going to go study in Tibet. And she went to Tibet, and she sneaked in. First of all, they weren't letting any foreigners in, so she sneaked in, you know, by wearing makeup and stuff, and like a phone, you know, some kind of phony beard or something. It's ridiculous. She actually got into Tibet, which, you know, even British spies couldn't do. And she became a student of a famous lama, really. And she lived like in a cave and all this stuff. And so anyway, she's the real thing, you know, actually. But she wrote this book called Magic and Mystery in Tibet, you know. And that too is full of like, you know, things, mysterious events and things like that. So anyway, I had read these books, and when I went to Sashin, I kind of thought it might be like that, you know, where I'd go into Dokusan and he'd go, you know, okay, these are the secret, you know, mantras, you know, this sort of thing. And it, of course, it wasn't like that at all, you know. There wasn't any mantras. I was sitting on the cushion and struggling with my pain, and I was trying to focus on my breath. And I really wasn't prepared for the simplicity of Zen, you know. Somebody was telling me, oh, Andy wasn't able to make it to the Sashin, but he one of his friends is studying Tibetan Buddhism, which is a very noble path. I'm not criticizing it in any way by criticizing Lobsang Rampa, you know. Anyway, Andy, one of his friends, is a student of Rinpoche. And Andy's friend told his teacher that Andy was practicing Zen, and the teacher said, you know, Zen is a very pure path. You know, that's a very kind of thing to say, and it's actually quite true. You know, there's a great simplicity to Zen, you know. It's not like you get to work up to your encounter with emptiness. You encounter it over and over again from the first time you sit down on the cushion. So you sit down at the cushion and you watch your breath, and all these thoughts come up. But if you just don't run away, if you don't jump in your car and run away, and you keep watching your breath, it's remarkable how quickly everything falls away. And you're left with great emptiness, yeah? If you let yourself encounter it. If you watch your breath long enough, just a while, you'll begin to notice that your mind is very blank, you know? You're sitting in pain, and you're struggling, and I know it's a struggle. It's really a struggle, you know. And your back hurts, and you're tired, etc., etc. Maybe you're sick, maybe you came to Sashin, and you weren't in good health. And you watch your breath, and you watch your breath, and eventually, if you look at your mind, it's like this blankness in there. And if you stay there long enough, you realize it's quite, at first it might just seem trivial. You know, there's this, if you watch your breath and you watch your breath and you watch your breath and you look at your mind, you'll suddenly notice that it's blank and dark. And you might think, oh, well, that's a funny thing. You know? But actually, if you keep sitting and you keep going back to that place, that blankness gets bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. It's really quite extraordinary. And if you stay with that blankness long enough, it really transforms you. You really become a different person. Everybody here, most people here, have been practicing before coming to Sashin. I probably made a mistake in letting that guy come. Most people here have been practicing, so you're a little bit more prepared for the experience, you know. And so, you know, already you've had encounters with that blankness. But, you know, this is like a big encounter. You know, so you come in and you sit down on the cushion and you watch your breath and you enter, have those moments of blankness. And you do that 8 or 9 times during the day. It's like entering a great ocean. You know, when people first encounter mu, it can just seem like a little, what's that? That's a strange thing. But eventually, if you go deeply into that blankness, it's like a great ocean. And it's very transformative. It's so wonderful. And it will clear away all your obstacles if you just go there. You know, we Zen people live our lives facing that emptiness. That's what it means to walk the path of Zen. It means being in that emptiness, you know, often, and being the servant of that emptiness. I call myself Kurt, you know. I pick up a check every 2 weeks from Rutgers, and I don't forget it. You know? And I get mail, and when I get mail, I go, ah, this is my mail, right? Because it says Kurt on the letters. You know? But I actually try not to spend too much time being Kurt. And I spend a lot of time in that blankness. And I can't praise it highly enough, because there's nothing like it. And you know, if you have fear and you go into that blankness, it will take away your fear. And for me, that's very important, because we all have our personal defects, and I would say that mine has always been like fear. And if you have shame and you go into that blankness, it'll take away your shame. And if you have anger and you go into that blindness, it'll take away your anger. And if you're jealous, it'll take away your jealousy. And if you hate yourself, it'll make you capable of loving yourself and accepting yourself. If you're impatient, it will make you patient. If you're aggressive, it'll make you kind. So this is a wonderful, wonderful thing. And living in that is a most wonderful life, in my opinion. And I would say I stumbled onto this, and I don't deserve it, but it's unspeakably beautiful. And by the way, this is very pure path, you know, because this is what the Buddha encountered too, you know. Entering into shunyata, deep shunyata, was the path for the Buddha to awakening. And it's the door into enlightenment, the door of the Buddhas and the ancestors. And if you're in pain and you go deeply into mushin, you watch your breath and you watch your breath. When you squeeze your dantian, your hara, you squeeze and you follow the breath out, you'll notice your pain recedes, and at the end of your breath, your mind becomes blank and dark. And then if you draw a breath, your thoughts and pain return. Then you do it again, and the pain goes away, and you enter this blank place. And then your pain returns, and you do it again. And even if you think your pain is unbelievably difficult to deal with, it's nothing compared to the power of mu. You can sweep it away with mu, or with the blank mind, by following your breath. And I promise you, there's no pain on this earth which you can't deal with. No pain that I've found that you can't deal with by working with mu. I'm not boasting, but this really happened to me. About 3 years ago, I had the brilliant idea of helping my neighbors build a fish pond. And their idea was to build a fish pond, and they asked me if I wanted to build a fish pond, and I said yes, and then we started planning this thing, and indeed we have koi in our fish pond. And they built one, and I built a little one, and then they built a little pond, you know, little spillway, and they bought a fountain and all this stuff. And so anyway, my idea was that we could go to this construction site that used to be near Bob Cook's house, up in near Blairstown, up near Washington, New Jersey. And I could get some stones. There was a big construction site, they were putting in a road, and there were all these natural stones just lying by the road. So I said to my neighbors, Fidel and Keith, why don't we go up there, and those are just stones that are there for the picking, you know. And if we don't get arrested, it must be okay, you know. So they rented a truck, and we went up there, and we started loading these things in the thing. Anyway, in the bed of the truck, these rocks. And these were really heavy rocks. And I was pulling one off a pile, and one rolled over my finger. And this was a number of years ago. Some of you might remember, I actually had a bunch of, I had like 12 stitches in one finger, and I don't remember how many stitches in the other. But this rock just slid over my hand, and at first it was like shocking, you know, like it didn't hurt. It was just like, oh, then I realized, oh, that wasn't right, you know. I looked down at my hand, it was like the whole finger was like torn open, you know. And so then I said, you know, I have to go find the hospital, Keith. And I jumped in my car and I drove around looking for the hospital, which was near Clinton, as it turned out. And I went in and I was sitting there going, oh, you know. And anyway, the nurse came in. And she said, well, let me check your pulse. And she said, my God, you know, your pulse is very quiet, you know. And I didn't say, oh, it's because I do Zazen. But honestly, you know, it works like a charm. You know, it was amazing, you know. I mean, it was amazing to me. So I can handle this, you know. But she said, that's very unusual, you know. So, you know, if you have pain, you know, use your power. Use mu power to deal with your pain. Even though it's all psychological, you know. That guy left here today because he was psyched out. You know, it's like, you know, this is like the ocean of mu. And this guy said, I want to go into the ocean of mu. But then he got up to the edge of the ocean, he puts his toe in, and it's like, oh! You know, that's... Woo, cold. but really, you know, I understand. I'm having a laugh, but I as I said, I could have easily done it myself if I had known how to get off Vashon Island, you know. But you know, basically, it's all psychological, right? You know, it's all a mind game. And he psyched himself out, right? He saw, holy smokes, I can never, you know, but don't allow yourself to fall into those games. You know, you can do this. You can do it. You know, you go follow the breath. Hang on to the breath for dear life. You know, go out with the breath for dear life. Fix your mind on your breath and go out. And then the next breath. And you don't have to get through an hour, you just have to get through one breath at a time, right? And you'll notice your mind begins to get blank and dark. You'll have these moments where there's no thought. You'll notice with maybe a bit of a surprise that there's no thought. Your mind is just blank and dark. And as I say, if you stay there long enough, it's the most wonderful thing. It's like it'll take away your pain, it'll take away your fear, it'll make you feel young, it'll make, you know, please, you know, trust it, you know. I think Zen is the most beautiful thing. And I think living that way is the most beautiful way to live. I really do. I mean, I can't recommend it highly enough. Because, you know, it's inexhaustible, you know. Some people, if you ever hear anybody say, I've finally done it, you know, I'm fully awake, blah, 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 you know, just don't, you know that person's not awake, you know. Because there's no point at which this can be exhausted. You know, like coming to your first sesshin, is like climbing a high mountain. You know, it is. It's like climbing a mountain, and it's hard. And you start climbing up the mountain, and you think, my God, will I ever get to the top of this thing? You know, but around day three, you're going to begin to feel much better. You really will. And you'll have all this new energy. It's like you're coming up to the top of the mountain. And that'll really happen to you if you just hang in there. And when you get to the top of the mountain, it's like, ooh, it's beautiful up here. You know, it's really nice. This is beautiful. My mind is so still. Everything is so beautiful. Everything is so lively. Everything is alive. This is really nice. And then you look to your right, and what do you see? Another mountain. Yeah. And then the next sesshin is the next mountain, right? You climb up and you go, oh, this is actually better. You know, and you look around, beautiful. Oh, another mountain, you know. And actually, the mountains get bigger and bigger, you know. You get stronger and, you know, you can just fly up the mountain. You know, it's always a challenge, but you really can just like bound up the mountain. There's always a bigger mountain, you know. And it never stops. That you know, maybe the idea that this never stops is terrifying right now. But actually, you know, I think, imagine if somebody said, well, there's no more scientific knowledge, we've got it all, right? How disappointing, you know? That would be so disappointing. Fortunately, you know, science can keep asking questions and learning new things all the time. You know, people don't normally well, maybe you don't think of Zen that way. It's like when I have a Daikensho, I will know all. But wouldn't that be disappointing? You know, the universe is vast, right? It's infinitely vast. And every time you overcome your fears and your personal limitations by going into Mu, you encounter a bigger world. It's true. I mean, I've been doing this for 35 years. If I'm lucky, I'll get to do it for 35 more years. I'll still, if I'm alive 35 years from now, I promise I'll be at Sesshin. And it's because every time you think, this is it. This is who I am. This is what I am. This is my limit. And then you go deeply into Mushin, and then you pass through all those illusions. And when you come out on the other side, you feel so connected to everything. And you realize, oh, that wasn't my real self. You know, that was an illusion. And then you think, okay, now these are my limits. This is my line. This is what, you know. And you go into Mushin again, and boom. And it's like each time you pass through that door, you know, on the other side, it's a bigger world. And you feel more connected to things. And this goes on and on and on and on. See how beautiful that is? But that's what this is all about. Please don't be mistaken. This isn't about being tough. It isn't about being, you know, putting up with pain. You know. That's a small incidental aspect of this process. It's going beyond the limits of our imaginary self and entering Mushin and then connecting more deeply with this beautiful universe. So it's like mountain opens up into mountain. You know, door opens, and every time you open the door, it's a wider horizon, you know. So please, believe me when I say this. You know, this is what Sesshin, this is what Zen is all about. It's a beautiful way of life. And it all, and the door is Mushin. The door is emptiness. So please, go through that door. Find that door, and go through that door. Every time you take a breath, if you can. And of course, you know, we're human beings. We get tired, we can't concentrate. You know, we're not up to 100% effort all the time. But when you do it, you know, if you stick with it just a little while, you'll see what I'm saying is absolutely true. You know, you'll feel like $1,000,000. You'll be so happy. And the world will be so alive. Doesn't it sound good? Yeah. So please, you know, put the car keys at the back of the drawer, you know, and forget about everything but, you know, this sit, this moment, you know, watching the breath, being one with Mu. And believe me, in a couple days, everything will be different. You'll feel like $1 million, and you'll be very happy. I promise you. Emperor Wu of Liang, this is the Emperor of China, asked great teacher Bodhidharma, what is the highest meaning? And, you know, tell me about the holy truths. Bodhidharma said, it's not holiness. You know, don't cling to that. Don't cling to holiness. Go through the door of emptiness. The emperor said, huh? Who are you? Bodhidharma said, I don't know. That's my path, you know. Emperor didn't understand. Bodhidharma subsequently crossed the Yangtze River, came to Shaolin and faced it. He sat in a cave for 9 years, and his students showed up, three students, two men and a woman, and they were the beginning of Zen in China. So, Zen in the United States is beginning right now, you know, and so please practice as you've been practicing. This morning, everybody did a wonderful job. You know, even the guy who left did a wonderful job. You know, he didn't move much. And if he lets himself be transformed by this experience, a whole new world is awaiting him. So anyway, you all did a wonderful job this morning. Let's plunge deeply into this ocean of Mu and see where we come out, okay?